Welcome, Green Future Growers, Progressive Radio Network listeners, and anybody who's new to the show. I'm your host, Jackie Marie Beyer, and let's get growing. FreeGardenCourse.com. Mike and I have developed some lessons to help you create your very own organic oasis. We'll guide you through the steps to build your perfect natural landscape, an edible earth-friendly yard, a sustainable deep-bed garden, or even start a small profitable market farm. We'll show you how to save time, lower your produce bill, collect usable data, eat healthy, nutritious food with minimal labor, use the most effective and efficient production methods currently being used in backyard gardens as well as market farms, and maybe even help you find some profitable markets. We've designed it to save you time, lower your produce bill, and help you eat healthy, nutritious food. There's checklists, there's outside reading, video assignments. You can join the online Facebook community where there's lots of people from around the world to help you get your garden started today. So remember, freegardencourse.com. Hey everyone. So I was actually interviewed on a show called The High Energy Girl. And so I thought you might like to listen to my interview. So here it is with Tracy.
Hey, Jackie, thanks for coming on the show today.
Well, Tracy, I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, I know we have a lot in common, and I can't wait for the listeners to hear from you. So why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself?
Okay, well, that'd be great. So my name's Jackie Marie Beyer, and my husband Mike and I have a property in Northwest Montana, and he's a big gardener. And so I started a podcast called The Organic Gardener Podcast. We're just about to celebrate 4 years, and so I just posted, I think, episode 254 with interviews that I've done with backyard gardeners, market farmers, sustainable agriculture experts, nutritionists, and just all sorts of people about the conversation about growing healthy, nutrient-dense food. And so my husband and I are just dedicated to helping people, I call it creating their own organic oasis, because whether you want to grow, like, you know, even if you're just interested in like landscaping, I got so many questions this summer about how to grow an organic yard. You know, people are really interested in just more, you know, and one of the things I've learned from my podcast is your yard is one of the biggest places you don't want chemicals, because where do your, you know, babies learn to crawl, or, you know, your dogs are running around and your kids, your toddlers are running around, and you know, that's one of the places. So I've got a ton of questions about that this summer. And then we have, he has what I call like the mini farm that he planted. So our goal is to grow as much produce as we can possibly grow for us, for our family. And then if we eventually get to being market farmers down the line, I don't know. We're not there yet. We have limited water resources. And then we just keep learning. Like I said, we've been married, I don't know if, it was in the pre-chat, or I said that we've been married for 25 years. And so we've been slowly building. I mean, we started out the first 6 years I was here, we didn't even have running water, and just, we would have like two little tiny beds. And so I've just, really, we've come a long way. So we are dedicated to helping people, you know, create their own organic oasis. Like I said, whether it's, you know, small, like just growing a tomato plant or some herbs, for your food, or, you know, growing a bigger place and even maybe starting to sell for market. So,
well, where are you located?
So we're in Northwest Montana in the Rocky Mountains. We're about 7 miles south of the Canadian border in the northwest corner of Montana. So we have a pretty short growing season. So we've learned a lot of techniques to help extend our season. But one of the benefits that I've learned after talking to my guests is that it's actually almost easier for us to grow than a lot of places in the South, because they have a lot more bug problems and pest problems. And so everybody has their challenges. The Northeast had a lot of rain problems the last few years. And just as our climate's changing, gardening's really changing. But the benefits to growing your own healthy food that's, you know, got more nutrients in it, that you're eating fresh, that you're eating locally, are just gigantic. And one thing that I've really learned, like I used to say, I had a brown thumb when I first started my podcast. Like I could barely keep a basil plant or a geranium alive. And since then, I've learned to grow a ton. And so I think that's part of what makes my show a success is that my guests are amazing, and it just really produces, like I was kind of telling you, my sound. I'm not known for my sound, but the quality of the content that my guests put out are, it's just incredible what we've all learned and shared, and the friends that I've made, it's like amazing. Like even people like that live a mile from me, or people on the other side of the world. Like my Facebook group has people from like Kenya and Australia and different places, but then I've met so many local people that, you know, that's the thing I love about podcasting, is you meet people that are like-minded. And we have a thing up here in Montana in the spring called a seed fair and a seed swap. And there's so many seeds that are given out, and there's so many classes that are taught. And I've made so many friends there that eventually, like, we'll go hiking together, or we'll work in different gardens together, or we go to, you know, the movies together. Like one friend and I went to an agriculture workshop in the middle of the state, and we like drove to Glacier Park together, and just all sorts of cool people you meet through your podcast. And like last year, so I actually grew up in New York, and when I went to visit my mom in June, I went to see the farms and meet some of my guests in person. It was so cool. Like I talked to this woman, Anastasia Cole Plakeus, who wrote this book called The Farm on the Roof, and they like have one of the biggest farms in Brooklyn on the roof. And she taught us the secrets to growing food up there, and just, you know, all the difficulties that they've gone through. And I don't know if I'm getting off topic here. Sorry.
That's what we do. We have rabbit trails, you know? So I want to ask you, how did you start getting into gardening? Have you always been curious about it, or did you have a health issue? I mean, what brought you to that point?
So, well, it's kind of funny. A lot of my guests agree with this. Like, actually, and my mom's always like, how did you end up with a gardening podcast? Because I'm not really a big gardener. Like I said, my husband does most of the garden, but I've always loved to eat. I eat a ton of vegetables. I'm just really big on eating super healthy food. And then my husband's just always been a gardener. Like his mom had big gardens, and my mom had big gardens. And my mom was always an educator and passionate about teaching people about organic gardening. But she tried, I'm not big on like, people laugh because I don't really like to do dirty garden jobs, as I call them. I like, you know, cause like you, I usually have a full-time job, and unless I'm like going down to the garden to work in the garden on a garden day, where like one thing I do like to do is dig new beds. Like, I don't know why. I just like, it's almost like, cause my occupation or trade by, you know, college is I'm an elementary school teacher. And it kind of reminds me of like, and also with weeding, like cleaning the blackboard. And so I do like to do that job, but like that's the day, like I have my garden shoes on, I have my like garden jeans on, they're all dirty. But when I come home from school, like I'm not necessarily like wanting to go down there and get my feet all dirty and start picking tomatoes or weeding, or which my listeners are completely not like that. They're much more likely to be the kind of people that are like, I'm going to go run barefoot through the garden and be out there all day. But my husband and I are both just passionate environmentalists. We're really passionate about eating healthy food, growing locally. And he just is an amazing gardener, like with the things that he can do. And so it's kind of interesting because since I started my podcast, I pay much more attention to what he does. And then we'll share like the things that we've learned from the other gardeners. And I don't know. So my passion really comes from loving to eat healthy food and just, you know, kind of being an environmentalist, really caring about our planet. And if you're going to have a garden, you know, hoping you're going to go the organic way, and just trying to teach people out there that there are lots of options besides just, you know, the first time you see a bug going and grabbing a bottle of pesticides and creating a whole environment. Like I said in the beginning, you know, like my brother is in New York, and he was one of the most downloaded episodes, and him and his wife don't grow any vegetables really, because they're both busy and they have kids, and his hours are crazy that he works. So they really like, the big things he talked about was like composting in the suburbs, and then the herbs that they grew, and then their fruit trees and their lawn. Really, like, they don't grow, you know, like my husband grows hundreds of pounds of potatoes, and, you know, 52 cans or 100 can, he'll can 100 cans of green beans or something. Like, he tries to grow, like, we're totally on opposite ends of the spectrum, but just learning different things that you can do. But, you know, if you have landscapers, you know, giving them options where they're not spraying your show or your yard.
So my husband's a landscape contractor, and he has a division called Green Streak Organic, where he does an organic grounds management for his clients so that they can, you know, spray and do herbicide and fertilizer and all of that that's healthy.
Excellent.
And he actually does this combination that it kills pests, but it fertilizes at the same time, and it's all organic.
Well, I would love to talk to him sometime. Maybe he could come on.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Yeah, we should do it together. We should come on together because I look at it from a health perspective and he just looks at it from, you know, the business side. But one thing I thought would be a cool thing for him to do, which would go along with what you're saying, instead of landscaping, call it farmscaping. Like, oh, yeah. Instead of planting plants that just sit there and suck up water, what yes. if you plant things that are actually going to feed your family?
Sure. Or even just like a big one is bringing in the pollinators. Like there's so many beautiful herbs and perennials that you can plant that, you know, if you're busy and you're going to feel, or especially a lot of my listeners are in California where, you know, they have access to farmers markets and they don't want to go they have access to lots of good organic fresh produce. Growing food for the pollinators in your neighborhood is food for them, like flowers for them, having a fruit tree there. And the thing I've been amazed with, so we dug a 560-foot well here, I think in 2013, so just 5 years ago. And so we were able to put in this orchard, and how much produce we get from the fruit trees and the cherry trees. But cherries are sour cherries, so I don't do as much with them, but it feeds the birds and the blooms and the spring, the butterflies that it brings in. It's just worth it to have those trees. And so something else people might want to think about that, growing a land, that's what your husband might, you know, want to talk to some of his people about. A lot of my listeners talk about having native plants. Like this one guest I had lives in this town with like 100,000 people, and yet his wife and they have a beautiful yard. People are constantly stopping by their yard, but they never water their yard. The only water that they water is for like the vegetables that they grow. They have a very small vegetable bed. They really like hot peppers and stuff, but they have access to a good farmer's market. So, but they have this beautiful native landscaping that doesn't require any watering. And just, I think they might save some rain water, but for the most part, it's because they're using native plants, and most places will have a native plant society where you can find, you know, what are native plants in Arizona, or what are native plants in Florida, or what are native plants in New York, or what are native plants, you know, here, and you can get access to either, you know, seeds or transplants.
So if you were to offer a person advice on how to get started with gardening, what do you like to teach people on how to at least just make step one?
So I always tell people start small and really think about what do you like to eat? You know, don't grow something just because those, you know, plants are in the store at the nursery when you're going to plant something. Like think about what is it you like to eat? You know, a basil plant in your windowsill is one of the easiest things to keep alive. And if you like to, you know, put any kind of herbs or spices in your food, you know, that's a great place to start. And then just maybe the other thing I always tell people is I really like I think my mom would grow more vegetables. People would grow more vegetables if they had deep beds that you can sit on the edge when you're doing your work. It's so much more convenient. It's going to make it so much easier and less work if you can sit on the edge and weed and harvest and just do all those things and just have, you don't need a big edge. And so I like to have like one little bed that's hip high and then a longer bed that's not quite so high. And there's just tons of benefits to having deep beds. But to me, convenience is key. So I would say make it convenient and make it something that you do want to eat.
Oh, that's a good point. We have 80 fruit trees.
Oh my goodness.
I know, it's crazy. And we planted the ones that we like to eat. But I'll tell you, you said something earlier, the birds are the ones who get the cherries. We never get cherries because the birds know exactly when they're perfect to pick and they get them first.
Yeah. But it's fun. Good to have birds in your yard, and I don't mind feeding the birds. And then, like I said, in the spring, the flowers, you know, there's some of the, you know, so we have flowers for the bees because I worry that we don't have enough bees and enough food for the bees here.
Yeah.
So it's nice to have those fruit blossoms for the bees, and trees provide shade. And I am amazed at the fruit we have gotten from our orchard. And then my husband, he's a big baker, and he always puts applesauce on the cookies. And this year he made homemade applesauce that was just to die for. Oh, it was so good.
Yeah. I don't even know if we picked apples. This year, we've both been so busy with work that honestly, the animals got more of the fruit than we did just because we just haven't been able to tend to our garden because we've been working like constantly. So what vegetables are you planting? Like, do you have a garden now? Because it's probably, is it snowy there?
Yeah, but believe it or not, I can still pick kale through the frozen snow right now. We don't have snow. We got a little bit of snow before Thanksgiving, so there's like some icy spots and like some. Our ground was froze, but it's almost like I don't want to say it's thawing out, but it's not like we've had a lot of rain these last few days, which is unusual. Usually we would have a lot more snow, but yeah, the kale is still out there growing. But for the most part, yeah, nothing's really growing right now in Montana.
So do you ever grow indoors when it's like too cold outside?
No, I just keep my basil plant going in my window
Okay.
is the only thing I really have growing. But we did grow. I mean, I could, it's funny because I just wrote a list of the top, because the most number one downloaded or viewed page on my website is the top 10 vegetables to grow in Montana. So I could go through those really quick if you want.
Sure, then
So people
that would
seem
be
to be.
pertinent for anybody who's in a cold environment, right?
Yeah, people seem to be really interested in that, I guess, because like I said, that's the most downloaded or viewed page and post that I've ever written. But the two other things that actually I talked about this year is if I was going to rewrite that episode, is that I would not grow spinach was one of the first ones that I put in there because I've always liked spinach, and this is the first year I grew kale. And kale, I think I would replace kale with spinach because in Montana, spinach, like, it does come up really good in the spring, but it's like the first thing to bolt in June. And then it's gone. And so I find that it's better to, oh, I can't find that post. I'm sorry. Do you like, is it
That's
hard to
okay.
edit
Here's
your
an
show
idea.
or? Okay, so when we were talking, this got cut off, but I'm going to add in here the 10 most productive crops to grow in Montana, the blog post I wrote. So if you were wondering what to plant in your garden this year or thinking of growing a garden, didn't know where to start, we compiled a list of the most productive vegetable crops to grow in a cold weather climate. So number one, Mike said was carrots. Number two was beets and golden beets. If you've never grown those, are like candy when you cook them, potatoes, green beans, sweet peas like sugar snap peas, broccoli, radishes was number seven, eight was lettuce, nine was spinach. So that's what I was saying. Ever since I found this dinosaur Lacinto kale, Lacinto is how it's spelled. It's not like the curly kale that you see in the store that I like, and the nutritional value for kale is so much greater than spinach. So, but I did see a picture of a photo of spinach that Mike grew the other day. So I'm not totally sure I'm ready to throw it out, but that Lacinto kale, it would take the top 10 list over spinach for me. And then number 10 was cucumbers. So Mike loves to grow cucumbers. So I'll just repeat those really quick. Number one was carrots. Two was beets. Three was potatoes. Four was green beans. Five was sweet peas. Six was broccoli. Seven was radishes. Eight, lettuce. Nine, spinach, which has now been replaced with kale. And 10, cucumbers, if you are wondering. I just wanted to add that in there. And there's a few more tidbits about growing them if you actually go to the post. So I just wanted to add that little bit in there.
Let's put a link in the show notes
Okay,
to
cool.
that post.
Perfect.
That way people can read the list and they can understand it because that's, see, I live in California, so we can grow anything, year round. There's no snow here, but we do have to worry about the frost. But in the snow, I wonder, because my son lives in New York and he is used to living on a little farm, right? So he's used to all the good quality vegetables. And he doesn't get that there. So that's why I was thinking that would be good advice for the listeners.
Oh, yep.
So we'll put that in the show notes.
Okay, that works.
Awesome. So if a person, like, Do you have any advice on like when they're buying produce at the market or at the farmers market? Do you have any good tips for that?
Well, that's a big part of why we came up with our show to try to help people, because a lot of times when you go to the market, food is expensive. But I have had several chefs come on and talk about food that you get from the farmers market. Like 2 different summers, I had somebody come on and like each week we would discuss things that you get at the farmers market. And there's certainly the, some foods like when if you have something that's growing in the ground, like root vegetables, like potatoes, they're going to get more chemicals because it's getting soaked into the soil. So, there's that list of a dirty dozen that you kind of like that are more important foods, maybe, or not more important, but just like ones that you would want to have be like if you have a choice to get something organic, you would want it to be like potatoes is one of them, strawberries is another one that, the pesticides are really high, grapes. So if you can grow those kind of things yourself, you're lucky, or, at the farmers market, if you know that the farmers market provider is somebody who's growing organically. Like one thing I get surprised about a lot is I just think if I'm going to a farmers market that it's going to be they're going to be an organic farmer, but that's not always the
Right.
case. You always kind of want to make sure you talk to the farmer and see where what practices are they? I mean, I don't think they have to be certified organic. A lot of times people who are natural farmers are going to actually have higher standards than some of the organic certification out there. So it's kind of good to just connect with the farmer and talk to them. And that's one of the big things on my show, guests have talked about, is talking to your neighbors, talk to other gardeners, talk to people, because some people have found that they've made mistakes by not talking to their relatives and just ordering something online and then finding out that that grass actually wasn't the best for their climate, or that vegetable didn't really grow. Or I've had a lot of nursery people come on and say, don't try to like move from Portland, Oregon, where maybe rhododendrons, bushes grow great, and think they're going to grow in the desert if you move down to Arizona just because you really love rhododendrons or something. I mean, I can't be sure that's I know rhododendrons grow where like my mom lives, and we couldn't really grow those here in Montana. You might could if you did like a ton of work. So thinking about talking to people and just finding out for sure about where they're getting their food from, what practices are they using. Another big thing on my show that people talk about is getting so you want to put like some kind of mulch in your bed, some kind of straw, some kind of hay to build up your soil. And if you get compost or manure or some kind of amendment that comes from animals that have been eating weed-free hay, that means that that hay has had some major chemicals, or maybe it's like genetically modified or something. And that then the animals will eat it, the horses or the cows. And then if you take that manure and put it on your garden, you're going to have a lot of trouble growing your seeds. A lot of gardens have been ruined that way. So that's been one big consistent tip on my show, is make sure that if you get any kind of manure amendments, it comes from animals that have not been eating weed-free hay.
Interesting. Wow, I've never heard that one before.
Huh. Yeah, that was, I guess, like it went through one of the ladies who worked at the nursery here in Montana talked about it, but then this other woman in Washington, Jacqueline Freeman, who really is like a big advocate for treatment-free bees, her and her husband like had it happen one summer where they got like some manure and put it in a new bed, and the or they put in they got manure from 2 different sources that same year for 2 different beds because they didn't get enough, and so they had to get some more, and the second bed just didn't grow, even though it was same seed, same climate, everything. The only thing different was that manure, and they were able to source it down to that. And I've since then have talked to numerous people that have said that's super important that you make sure you know where the animals you're getting your manure from are being fed.
Oh, wow. Okay, I'm gonna have to tell. I don't know if my husband knows about that one. I'll have to share that.
And it's
So,
taken me a long time to wrap my head about it, because usually you think weed free, chemical free, you think if it's something free, it's going to be better, but it's actually the opposite. And it's taken me a long time to, be able to like say that with confidence that I'm seeing it the right way.
yeah, but that makes sense. I mean, really,
Yeah, it
like,
does.
so One thing that interests me a lot is sustainable farming. So like back, I read Michael Pollan's book. I don't know if you've read Omnivore's Dilemma, but it's excellent. And essentially what they said is that all the problems in agriculture really happened when they separated the livestock from the farm. So when everything used to be like the livestock would feed on the leftovers from the vegetables, and then they would fertilize the garden, and it was just like the sustainable farm. And then when they moved everything and separated it, that's when like a lot of problems happened. What's your experience with that?
I actually, one of my most downloaded episodes is this couple, the Dohertys, and they wrote a book about that. And then also there's a farmer's market near us called Lower Valley Farm that Jay and Mandy Gertz, I call her the CrossFit gardener of 2015, because like with her and her husband, the amount of people they feed and the food that they grow, just the two of them, is amazing. And just they both are like living examples of people that have done that, that there's definitely a big movement. It's kind of part permaculture. It's kind of part just, you know, more living with the land. And so there's a whole method to where like you maneuver the animals, and you have things called paddocks where the animals will like go and eat. And actually it helps for even them to just disturb the animals. I mean, even way back with the buffalo and the Native Americans back in the old days, like, you know, it's just a natural, like exactly like he's saying, you know, the animal drops their, you know, where they go to the bathroom, the manure, you know, goes into the dirt, where they're walking, where they're eating, where they're chewing. And it's just like the whole circle of life thing. So people are trying, a lot of smaller successful farms are incorporating animals and animal husbandry into the whole ecosystem and environment. And yeah, there's definitely a lot to be said to that. And my husband and I go back and forth a lot between the whole vegan thing, because here in Montana, I feel like if we just like a dairy cow that lived here and had a really nice life, that's better than me importing almond milk or cashew milk from miles away. And that dairy would be natural. Now, we don't have a cow yet. We don't have, we have chickens here is all we have. We had sheep for a while, but a predator came and got them. And so we're trying to, you know, but that was part of why we got the sheep, was for a lot of reasons. My husband wanted them to build pasture out of some of our forest land. He wants the manure for the gardens. You know, we thought sheep because I thought the wool would be cool. You know, I could maybe get into felting or something because I'm really artistic, and just, you know, so that was something we thought about would be good for us. He grew up with cows when he was a kid. I mean, they grew up on a 1,200-acre ranch, and so they always had cows. And but just so I kind of, you know, there's that whole piece of that of living with the land and just trying to really reduce your carbon footprint. And so I think it really depends on where you are, you know. I was just saying, like, the part about where, you know, if you live somewhere, it's just kind of more about living local. And, you know, what's in your neighborhood? If you live closer to maybe cashews or almonds, you know, maybe a vegan where you can get those other things might be a better option for you than it is for someone like me. I'm not really sure what the answer is.
Well, that was funny. But I would have to actually say, in my opinion, okay, and everybody has their own opinion, I agree with you, because I think that local is really important. And they always say buy seasonal, because I'm like an integrative health coach. Mm-hmm. And so I agree with you as far as being local and seasonal is the best for us. And I also believe that we're bio-individuals. So everybody's bodies can respond differently. Like, I can't do dairy, but I'm also not a vegan, even though I live on a farm. Because I love my meat and my protein, but some people would get sick if they ate the way I eat. But, you know, we need to find out what works best for our own bodies, right?
Sure. I was going to say, well, and like one compromise my husband and I always have is fish, because I feel like when the salmon run in the fall, it's like they turn red, they spawn, and then they just are laying all over the bank. So to me, it seems wasteful to not eat those that are there. And then the other quick tip I was going to say, a lot of people are surprised that I say on my show, but my husband pickles beets. And in the winter, what I can't even like hardly stand a tomato from the store, I'll put pickled beets on my salad. And just that like makes the whole, it just gives me that red boost of antioxidants. And just to me, I ever since I've been doing that, I like never put tomatoes on my salads in the winter.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Mm-hmm. And pickled beets are great. Beets are so detoxifying for you.
Yeah.
So that is actually really healthy. And we love beets. We love beet salad with goat cheese.
Oh, me too. And like Mike started growing golden beets a couple of years ago. Those are so good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh. That sounds amazing. My husband and I love like beet salad with goat cheese and walnuts.
Yeah. You know what's
funny? A
little
bit of garlic.
My mom gets goat cheese from Montana in her little grocery store in her little town in New York. She's like, look at this goat cheese I found. It's from Bozeman.
Oh, yum. That's got to be delicious.
Yeah, it is. So, yeah. There's so many great things. And just the whole flavor of fresh food. Once you get used to like fresh eggs, it's really hard to go back to not having live chicken eggs. And just the whole flavor of food that's grown at home. And besides the fact that when you put that effort into it, it just almost tastes better just from doing it yourself. You'll find you'll be like, wow, I can't wait to go taste my lettuce or pick my cherry tomato or my radish today or just something.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. Especially the big one is the tomatoes. I mean, those like buying store-bought tomatoes versus garden tomatoes, you just really notice a difference.
Well, it's because a lot of the reason is those farms are not breeding the tomato for its flavor. They're breeding it for freshness on the shelf and transportation and how long can it sit and how perfect can it look in the store. And so I was just like, one of the things I was writing in that course that I'm creating is I was talking about how when I think about our produce for sale and the produce that I picked, I really was noticing this summer, like I'm not very picky in how my produce looks. I don't care if it's got a ton of holes in it. You know, I'll eat anything. I'm really, you know, I love to just go out there and pick Swiss chard and kale and lettuce and just eat it right then. But when there was a local new kind of market, they called it the pharmacy, that had like this little farm stand outside of her store in town this year. And she was like, I'll take all the organic food you guys can bring in. And so when I started thinking about picking it for her, I realized a lot of our crops are not what I would want to display and how much of a difference there would be. So the learning curve from going from backyard gardener to farmer market farmer is just huge. And so we've been, you know, now we're learning how to grow more produce, but now it's going to be next year. I think one of our goals is going to be growing more quality produce and thinking about that. But so that's a big reason why the taste is so different, is because they're not breeding it for taste. They're just breeding it to make sure it's going to get there and it's still going to be looking red and juicy on the shelf.
Yeah. And that's what happens. They grow it and then they pick it green and then they put in a truck and they gas it so that it matures. And then think about how nutrient devoid it is, because when they grow it to its actual ripeness and pick it and eat it, even animals don't eat the green stuff that they pick. You know, like if it's a green plant, like the animals, even like my dog, will wait until a tomato is perfect and then he'll go and eat it. You know, he's not going to eat a green one though, you know?
Yeah.
So, but that's what they do. And so the nutrient quality is just not existent. And people say, oh, I eat healthy, but they don't realize that they're not actually getting what they need from their food.
Yeah. And people don't realize, like like I was talking about, the nutrient density of the food is like, the same person can, or two different people can eat the same lettuce and one of them's going to be able to digest that differently based on, you know, your gut biome and just different things. But also like you said, the quality of the food and how it's grown is huge in the difference of if it's grown to, and a lot of that comes down to healthy soil. And so a lot of people have asked me, why are you starting your garden course out talking about composting? But the number one thing everybody has said on my show is it all comes down to to your soil. And there's three ways to build up your soil, either compost or grow green manure, like cover crops, or to get manure like from animals, like chickens or cows and things like that. And so I just feel like the thing that we struggle with the most at my house is like having quality soil, because we're always expanding and just I cannot keep enough compost here. And even with our chickens, like we're always looking for sources of manure and we're always looking for sources. So last year I really learned a lot about growing, like I grew some buckwheat, some cover crops, and that was so easy. And that's a great way to nourish your soil. And also buckwheat, you know, made tons of flowers for the bees, and there's just a whole lot of reasons to grow cover crops. And that's another reason why people like that'll be making nutrients for soil if you're even just growing a landscape by putting some of those pollinator flowers out there. Like clover's a huge cover crop. We kept telling my mom last year, put more clover in. You need more clover in your soil, because in her town, there's this like bindweed that's everywhere. It's just rampant. I was so surprised when I really noticed it last summer, probably because so many people were asking me about organic lawn care. And there's this bindweed that's going through. And what was the other thing? He called it quackgrass. And so the quackgrass was all dying out and all these people were having all these brown spots. And he said, well, the best thing we can do is just put lawn seed on it now. But I thought they should be putting more clover in their grass mix, because clover's going to put nutrients in your soil. It's going to put like nitrogen and, you know, phosphates and, or I don't know what it puts in for sure. What are the three big ones? Nitrogen, phosphate, and
potassium.
And so, but I'm pretty sure the clover mostly adds nitrogen. And so just having that in your, you know, it will help your lawn look nice, and it's good for your soil. It'll build up your soil. So you're not going to, that quackgrass isn't going to grow.
So I'm writing this down. So you're saying to grow, well, I don't think we have crabgrass here, but are you saying to grow clover in your garden as like in between your plants?
Yeah.
In your
rows, or also like in our lawn, like in our regular lawn or in the lawn, you know, there's lots of clover mixed in. But also, yeah, Patty Armbruster was like sharing on Facebook all these posts of this one garden that took it. They're like a market farmer, and they took it, and like the place where you walk is pure clover in between the beds. And then,
oh wow, and it's probably pretty too, huh?
Yeah, it's really pretty. It's really soft on your feet, and just it's just putting more nutrients into the soil. I'll try to see if I can find a picture and send you for your show notes.
Oh, that would be so awesome, Jackie.
Yeah, there's so many different things people can do to try to help, you know, save water and just really do different things for our planet that are also healthy for you. Like another thing I was going to point out is that when you buy flowers at the market, a lot of people don't realize that they spray those flowers with chemicals like crazy before most of those flowers come from South America, and customs is not going to let those flowers come into our country without spraying them and making sure that there's no bugs coming in from down there. And so, you know, purchasing local flowers. A lot of times, like when I was at Whole Foods in New York visiting my mom, I asked him, I was like, do you have any local flowers? And he said, just the sunflowers. And like, you know, that's a big place you can make an impact, because they really spray those flowers down with some chemicals. Like hardly any flowers that come into the country have not been sprayed.
Wow. I love how I can learn so much from my guests. I'm telling you, that is one of my favorite things I like about podcasting, is selfishly learning new things, you know?
Yeah, I know. I always feel like I talked about that once. I feel so guilty because I get to hear it first. And like a lot of times, like I'll do the interview and I'll be like, I want to put this up right away. Like, I just want my listeners to hear this, because I love my guests. I have the best. I love my guests. They've been great. And my listeners. I'm really lucky, because a lot of times my listeners will come on and be a guest. And they do great episodes.
Yeah, that's really cool. Okay, so we're starting to wrap up. So what advice would you want our listeners to just take home and apply to their life?
Well, you know, your health is the most important thing. And so the more nutrient dense food that you can eat or grow, the healthier you're going to be. And then, but then also, you know, like on the flip side, if you feel like you have a brown thumb, like I do, there's a lot of things you can do just with your landscape. And it's really not as hard as it looks. Like I've learned so much, and I've been much more successful over these last few years than I ever thought. And so, that I would just say, you know, start small, grow what you want to eat, and you know, if not, just grow something for like the bees and the birds and for our pollinators.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I like that idea too, especially for the bees. Oh my gosh. Like birds, we can give seed and we can put out feeders, but bees, not so much,
And
right?
butterflies are another one. You know, the monarch butterfly is so endangered, and that's another beneficial insect that you can bring into your yard and will help out. And praying mantises, I mean, but so there's a
Okay.
lot you can do even if you don't want to grow vegetables. You know, flowers, especially like, you know, I love perennials because you put them in 1 year and then they'll grow for years and years and years, and you don't have to do anything. There's a lot of herbs that are perennials. You know, my chives are the first thing the bees eat, and then the oregano, and that grows like a weed around here. But the bees love it.
I
Pretty good
love
for
oregano. I
flowers.
love oregano. Use that all the time. All right. Well, I was really fun talking with you, my dear. You are a true high energy girl.
Well, thanks,
Seriously.
Tracy. I was so excited because I've been listening to your show, and like you said, it's so fun to meet other friends who, you know, are into podcasting and learning about taking care of our health. And just I learned so much from your guests too. So I love that. I love the whole high energy thing.
Oh, how funny. You want to hear a funny story? So
Yeah.
it's been my brand for a long time. And I took a course and they were like teaching us how to, figure out like our brand name and all that. And I was asking people like what their experience of me is and trying to find out like who people identify me as. And that always came up. And then a little while later, I went and I had blood work done. And my doctor's like, your B12 is really high. And I was talking to my mom and she's like, and she said, how'd your blood work come out? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, the only thing that was wrong is he said that my B12 was really high. And she goes, oh, I take that for energy. And we were cracking up because, it's like, okay, the high energy girl comes by it naturally. My B12 just keeps going up every year. And the doctor doesn't seem to be worried. Because I eat a lot of red meat, but it was just kind of funny.
Huh, that is funny. Well, that's good. We always call my mom the Energizer Bunny. I wonder what her B12 is like.
Oh yeah, it's not I don't think it's a bad thing because nothing else is wrong, so he doesn't seem to be concerned. So I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah, well, she's one of the healthiest people I know, so
Oh, awesome.
I'll bet. Well, that's awesome. Well, that's good. So you think that's where you get the B12 is from eating a lot of meat?
I don't know. I don't know why else I would have it because I literally have a lot of B12. So I have no idea why, but I don't care because I'm really healthy. So I feel like if there was a problem, they'd let us know,
Yeah. Well, good for you. You look like you're in really good shape.
Oh, well, thank you. I just work hard at it. I have two unhealthy parents, and I'm bound and determined to change the trajectory of my own health and my family. So that's kind of my motivation. I don't want to go back. I don't want to end up where they're at.
Yeah. Well, good for you. My mom's super healthy, so she takes really good care of herself, and she's like, you know, the president of her tennis, she was like the captain of her tennis team and president of her garden club, and well
Oh,
into her
cool.
80s. So
Wow, that's
yeah,
good.
so
So
she's
you're
always
opposite.
going. Yes.
Yeah.
Nope. So, but I'm working on it. I mean, my physical goal for this year was to walk or run 365 miles like total, and I just broke 300 miles, so I have 65 miles to go in December, and I think I should be able to do that. I mean, I hope so.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
I know. I just realized the other day that I'm that close because I like got a new phone in April, and so my other data is on in another place, so but I just broke almost 200 miles on this phone, and then I know I had 100 miles in April, so
Oh, good for
65 to
you.
go. Yeah, so I'm pretty excited about that. So I exercise not a lot, but I'm pretty, you know, I'm healthier than most people, I think. And then I try to work in the garden with Mike a lot, but I'm more of a walker.
Yeah, I don't run at all. Unless I'm at boot camp, I used to run, but I'm bow-legged and pigeon-toed.
Oh.
So that doesn't seem to work out very well for a runner.
Well, I ran my first half marathon in 2013, And then I did another one in 2015, and then I've been trying to do another one since then, but I haven't really, I don't know, since I just turned 50. I'm 51 this year, and it's been harder, it seems, to get back in the
Yeah.
flow. I don't know.
I used to run a lot of half marathons. I did probably 10, and but I
Wow.
was alternating between running races and being in physical therapy for pain, you know? So I'd get
Oh.
shin splints and patellar tendonitis all the time. So I was just like, forget it, I'm done, you know?
Yeah. Well,
So
maybe it's good that I don't run so fast then, 'cause I run really slow. Like it takes me almost 4 hours to do a half marathon. Like I get to mile 10 and I'm just like dying. Like I just really want to like run the whole thing straight through. Like I get to mile 10 and then I start walking and I'm just like practically have to carry me across the finish line. So I would like to get to the point where I can just run straight through all 13 miles, just nice. And like, and I never ran before that year, like my whole life. And so it's kind of a new thing to me. So I don't know. I think it takes a lot of time. And like, probably since I've had this podcast, I haven't had the time to train. It's just, it really does. I mean, it takes a concerted effort. And everything takes, you know, people are always like, well, you have to, you know, put the energy into it, or you have to put your mind to it. But if I did that, then I wouldn't have my podcast. And right now, that's been my priority. So.
Yeah, we all have those for sure. So, listen, I've got to run, but it was super great talking with you, my dear. And I
You
thank
too.
you so much for your wisdom and for your sharing all the wonderful things you've learned. And congratulations for making it such a huge milestone. I mean, 3 years is a long time.
Oh, well, thanks, Tracy. I appreciate it. And thank you so much for all that you do. FreeGardenCourse.com. Mike and I have developed some lessons to help you create your very own organic oasis. We'll guide you through the steps to build your perfect natural landscape, an edible earth-friendly yard, a sustainable deep bed garden, or even start a small profitable market farm. We'll show you how to save time, lower your produce bill, collect usable data, eat healthy, nutritious food with minimal labor, use the most effective and efficient production methods currently being used in backyard gardens as well as market farms. And maybe even help you find some profitable markets. We've designed it to save you time, lower your produce bill, and help you eat healthy, nutritious food. There's checklists, there's outside reading, video assignments. You can join the online Facebook community where there's lots of people from around the world to help you get your garden started today. So remember, freegardencourse.com. Hey there, green future growers. Would you like your friends and neighbors to create an organic oasis too? Would you like others in your area to learn about earth-friendly practices for their gardens and yards? If so, we would love it if you would share the Organic Gardener podcast with your local community or college radio station today. Thanks again for listening, and remember, grow local.